Right, welcome. Thank you for taking your time out of a busy schedule and joining us here this afternoon for a deployment session. I'm Johan, this is me, and this is Mike.
Yes, it's true.
We have a very good day today because earlier today, our good friend from Finland gave us the Finnish administrator cap. Apparently, is administrator in Finnish, so we're very proud.
Yes, we are. Of course we are.
Very proud. Now, this session is about MDT and Config Manager, meaning both the standalone version with LightTouch and the stuff that MDT extends with Config Manager. So we decided to, instead of doing exactly all the same demos twice, we're going to mix and match a little bit. Because what happens is that most of the stuff that you can do in MDT, you can do on both platforms in the exact same way. But we have decided to fill this session with tips and tricks from the real world that we have seen customers are using when working with these two platforms. So just out of curiosity, how many of you are using Config Manager in here? I would say it's about a good half of the people here. LightTouch? The other half. Okay, got it. I did see some raising the hand twice, so.
That's cheating.
That's actually not that uncommon. We have customers, and I know you have too, that actually uses Config Manager for client deployments, and they use LightTouch for server deployments.
Yeah.
Apparently, the client and the server team doesn't talk much.
Nah, that happens.
That happens. Also, we'll be using a bunch of VMs up on stage. This environment that we have here is available for download, and I'm going to show you in a minute how that one works. It's called Hydration. It's essentially a script that builds the exact same environment that we have here on stage. Now, demo.
Yes, please. I've seen slides before, so if you can just do
it. Yeah. If you have questions, and we love questions, feel free to send them on Twitter to this hashtag, which we are monitoring here on stage. If you're not able to answer all the questions during the session, we will answer them later tonight. So if you do have questions, feel free to send them in. We also accept questions live from the audience too. So raise your hand and ask a question. And Mike, can you do the...
Yes, I can do that. For really good questions or other questions too, we do have two books. They are signed by the authors, and I know both of them.
What Michael was saying is really good questions might come with a reward.
Yeah, and if you do send in the questions to the Twitter feed and it's very late, you get very interesting answers, right? So
depends on how late.
Yeah, in the morning?
Yeah. So, Hydration. If you go to my blog, and my blog is Deployment Research, and you search for the keyword hydration, and that has nothing to do with cervezas or water or anything that you drink. It's the concept of automating the build of a lab. So if you search for hydration, and by the way, we are going to show you a few samples here today, scripts and whatnot. All those are available for download from that post as well. So the very last post on my blog is the session sample files from TechEd. So if you search for hydration, you'll find a bunch of them, but the one we are using here is the one that is named System Center somewhere here. Here we go. And as you can see, it's massive download. Really big one. That's the download size. You can even do this on the hotel Wi-Fi, promise. What you do once you downloaded that kit, and that's a kit that builds these virtual machines for you, fully automated. Works in Hyper-V and works on the other platforms as well. So what you get is a zip file, and you simply unpack that zip file, and you get a folder. In that folder, there is a structure. And the guide on the web page simply says, copy those files into that folder. What it means is that you need to find media. So for example, you need to download either a full version of Windows Server or a trial version of Server and copy that to this folder, which the instructions on the guide say. There will be instructions saying, go ahead and find background info and copy it to that folder. There will be get config manager and copy config manager to that folder. So you simply do copy and paste about 10 times, copying either trial or full versions into the right folders. And once you have done that, you open up the deployment share, because the download is a light touch deployment share, ready made. So here are all the sequences, here are all the applications, here are all the operating systems that are included. So for example, to build this, you just right-click media, and you click update. So download the zip file, unpack it, copy some files to the folders, and then update the media. And you get the bootable ISO that is somewhat big. It's about 25 gigs if you do all System Center. If you only do Config Manager, it's about 12. But everything is about 25. So then you create a virtual machine, either clicking through the UI or you open up PowerShell, because if you open up the download, you will see a source extra folder, and there is a script that helps you build virtual machines. I only have scripts for Hyper-V, but I'm pretty sure if you are using VMware or another platform out there, you know how to script those as well. So this is just a PowerShell script that builds any of these VMs. So for example, if I want to build a TechEd domain controller for Mike, I can do that. You get it wrong. How about that? And it's automatically being mounted on that ISO. And this is a normal offline media. It will boot WinP5. And eventually, it will present you with a selection screen of sequences. In a moment. It's coming.
Yeah. It's the computer is thinking. Yeah. No, it's calculating, either good or bad. But it's just a calculator.
So here's the deal. I recommend you guys to start building the domain controller. The reason is all the other VMs is trying to join the domain. It turns out to be difficult if you don't have a domain controller. But the deal is, you select one, you hit enter, 20 minutes later you have a domain controller. You create a second VM, you leave the domain controller running, boot it up on the ISO, same ISO, select a different sequence. And about an hour later you have a config manager server, or an MVC server, or a VMM server, or an ops manager, or service manager, or whatever. It's no excuses anymore for not having a lab. It's so easy to build. So I will turn this one off.
And it is quite important. One of the things we can see at customer sites is that they do have the production environment and then they have a lab environment. No, sorry, they don't have a production environment. They do have a lab environment.
Which is in production.
Which is in production. And everything you want to do is like, we can't do that because, you know, it's production. Okay, can we make a copy of this? No, we can't. Okay, can we build a test environment? No, we can't. So you want me to do everything in your lab environment, which is your production environment? Yes. Ooh, that's scary. So the trick will be that it's very hard to learn anything if you can't redo it. Build it up, try it, test it, verify it, thrash it, and start over and start over. The time it takes for me to build an entire lab is approximately 4 hours. And that's from nothing to an entire System Center private cloud environment, including Hyper-V, Virtual Machine Manager, and every template there is. That means I can easily rebuild my entire lab on Monday morning, perform the labs and testing on Tuesday and Wednesday, and then rebuild it again.
We actually run this on our laptops here locally. The reason it works is because of two things. One, we have a local solid state drive. Second, we are using deduplication in Windows Server 2012 and R2 to make sure we can store stuff even if you have small drives. So for example, if I look in my VMs folder, you can see I have almost 3 terabytes of VMs consuming only 200 gig solid state space. So in fact, you are well off with a 480 gig SSD to run basically any lab these days because of deduplication, which works as a, it looks like this actually. This is deduplication. That's what Windows does with your files when you enable deduplication. It chops them into pieces, and every identical piece is being thrown away. The rest are compressed.
So that is the logical explanation to the deployment bunny then?
Yeah, like rabbits and carrots.
Just, checking here. Right?
Yes. Sorry? Okay, the question is, do I need a server to run deduplication? Depends if you want to be supported or not. It's only supported in Server 2012. And it does not do anything to performance. We've been running this for years. It really doesn't affect performance if you have a solid state drive. I've seen, even posted, solutions for how to enable that on Windows 8.1 as well. Because it's possible, it's just not supported. So you're on your own risk if you try to do that. So we are running server here. Anyway, it's a good feature, really nice feature. But of course, we are using sequences to do this. When we do client deployments, because these were server deployments, you typically do a lot more customizations to them, especially in production. So not only just creating the base sequences, but also start creating templates that you can use as a baseline when you create new sequences. You start adding production material like apps, BitLocker, UEFI support, and what more. So, Mike, take it away.
Yes. Would you mind switching to...
I'm on it.
Yeah, that's good.
That's you.
That's me. So if I move my mouse... Yeah. So what I see when I do visit customers and work with them is that they use the standard templates, right? And they modify the templates for every task sequence. And if you open a task sequence, let's open this one, data center. It might look like a standard sequence, but there's a lot of small things that we normally tweak and fix. Applies both for LightTouch and for configuration management, but this is for LightTouch. One of the is for LightTouch is the gather local only. In many cases, you have complicated rules, and therefore you need to run the custom settings.ini rule twice. So I need to check the gather local data and process rules. How easy is that to forget when you create a new task sequence? It's very easy because it's just a checkbox, right? In LightTouch, you don't need to define what custom settings.ini file you're supposed to run against, but if you do configuration manager, you need to specify it. So that's one small thing. Validation. Well, depending on your environment, maybe you do virtual machines and checking for the processor speed might or might not work. There's a lot of virtualization platform that gives you the performance of 1 hertz. And that's kind of low. But then on the other hand, 2 milliseconds later, it's 1.3 gigahertz. It goes up and down when you ask it. So for virtual machines, that might be something you uncheck. Okay, state capture, pre-install, let's do pre-install. Well, if you do driver stuff, that's one of the other things that you need to modify. And if you don't modify it, you need to modify it for every task sequence you create. There's a lot of things that I like to do during the deployment. In this case, I have an upgrade script that actually upgrades the SKU to the top level. Meaning when I have a reference image for Windows Server 2012 R2 or 2008 R2, 2012, I only create 1 reference image for the standard version. And then I use a script that uses DISM to bump them up. Instead of having one reference image for each SKU. Because it takes time to create reference images. So I have only one and I bump it up by using this script, and then I need to set it to, well, this is supposed to be upgraded to the data center edition. I need to restart, maybe I need to enable this. So you do a lot of customization. And when you create a new task sequence, you're supposed to remember everything. How many of you do remember every step that you are forced to modify when you create an... You don't count.
I do.
It's hard. So what happens is that you miss just one of them, you do a test deployment, and it, you know, blows up, and, I forgot to do this. So you do all these modifications, you verify that everything works, you might want to do modifications to your unattended XML file too. And when you're done, you're done. This is going to be in that folder. So if I open this folder here, and I go to the templates folder. It's not in the deployment share, it's in the program files root. So it's going to be in C: program files, Microsoft deployment toolkit, and templates. You can actually see all the templates here. They are XML files. So if I go up here, I'm going to see the server XML file. Let's open it up. That's the standard server task sequence. And here's the entire sequence that we use as a template. Now, what if I do like this? Let's go to the deployment folder, the MDT production, and let's find control. And let's find one of those really nice sequences I have. Oh, here it is, TSXML. Let's do a copy of that and rename it to Via Monstra Super Server, which is a good name, I think, isn't it?
It has to be named, right?
Yeah. It's mandatory. So
basically taking a sequence that you're happy with, making a copy of it, and store it in the templates folder. That's it.
And then you open it up, and it says standard server task sequence. No. This is the Via Monstra Super Server Task Sequence, I believe. Say that, go back to the deployment workbench, and with a bit of luck, we should be able to type in an ID and give it a name and do next, and maybe we can select that template now. I prefer to do it this way. That means when I go to a customer, I have a bunch of ready-made templates, and it is kind of funny because people go like, oh, what kind of modifications do you do? I can't remember anymore, but I have these modified templates that we use, and they are, you know, ready to go. So how do you document this? Well, here's a tip. It is documented. It is an XML file. So when a customer asks me for, can you provide some documentation? Absolutely. So I send them the XML file and say, no, we prefer it in Word. So then I take this and I do like ones like this.
And then I start Word, PDF.
And then I paste it in Word, and then I send a Word document instead. Well, it's in Word, right? So the thing is that instead of having this like 40 pages or 120 pages of manual documentation how to click things, just send them something that works out of the box. We do the same thing when we write books. Well, the last book we were writing was like 400 pages. We can't do that. Let's make it smaller. Let's convert every GUI click description into script instead. Whoops, 200 pages. Nice.
Yeah, easier to test too.
So this is light touch, but you can do the same thing in Configuration Manager. John.
So obviously in Config Manager, getting templates to work, it's much more difficult because the folder you need to copy to is named differently. So when you install MDT and integrate that with Config Manager, and by the way, if you're having Config Manager and you don't have the integration, you're doing it wrong. So in the MDT installation directory, is there a folder which could be suitable to store Config Manager templates in? If you just educated guess here.
Bin?
Yeah, bin is a good folder. Oh, that one. So this is where you have your Config Manager templates. So if I go into my Config Manager console and create a new template, you can see that I have my happy template, which I'm pretty sure that you don't have. It's just an exported XML file that I have copied into that folder, and here is my happy template. Works exactly the same as with LightTouch, it's just a different folder. Same story goes. And the reason we do this is because, for example, what do you need to do in LightTouch, Mike, to get UEFI to work? UEFI, if you're going to deploy Surface Pro 3.
Yeah, so I'm a consultant now.
Yeah.
Okay, I need to spend at least 10 to 15 hours to configure that.
Meaning you're in the bar having a Captain Morgan.
Yeah, more or less.
Yeah.
Because in LightTouch, UEFI just tends to work straight out of the box. You don't do anything at all. You just deploy machines. The only thing that is actually important is to boot it correctly. You need to boot on a UEFI device, meaning UEFI Pixie or UEFI USB stick or something like that. So it's about booting it correctly. Otherwise, it works straight out.
However, in Config Manager, it was one of those scenarios they forgot to test UEFI-based deployments. So by default, with the default template, it doesn't work at all. So I will do a sequence for Mike. It's a Windows 8 sequence, 8.1. I'm going to join a domain.
So you're going to create a sequence that doesn't work for me?
Yes.
Thank you.
You're nice welcome. To know. You need to specify an account that has permissions to join the domain, of course. And of course, you use PowerShell to set those permissions. Be a monster organization. Never use to capture an image. No, we use MDT to create images. Select the boot image. I will select the WinPE 5.1 that I have. In general, I do not recommend that you use WinPE 5.1. Use 5.0. It works beautiful in Config Manager. I select an MDT files package, and that's just the package in Config Manager holding all the MDT scripts. I will select the image that I added, previously created in LightTouch, so I will select my Windows 8 image. Zero touch means no wizard, user-driven means wizard. And here's the difference between LightTouch and Config Manager. LightTouch, by default, has a wizard that you can automate. Config Manager, by default, is automated, but you can add a wizard if you want to start and ask for things. It's just the default behavior. OSD-wise, that works the same. Select the client package, and this is something I always recommend Config Manager customers do. Create a separate package for the client in which you also add in the hotfixes. So for example, in this package, as you can see here, I have both the normal client files, but I also created a hotfix folder in which I copied the CU3 update, so that when I deploy this sequence or deploy a sequence, it's also being updated to the latest version, and I don't have to do that afterwards. And having a separate package for the Config Manager client also gives you a little bit more control, and it allows you to test that package in a pilot environment first, production later. It's nice. If you operate the default package, then you're in production right away. I select existing UseMT package. The one that I get with Config Manager is good enough. Or is it? Which version of the UseMT package should be using when deploying Windows 7 and Windows 8 in Config Manager? From which version of ADK does UseMT is being copied? It's from ADK 8.1. The version of UseMT is 6.3, sort of. The reason I say sort of is because there is how many versions of ADK 8.1? Four. Depending on when you downloaded it. Now you will see that there are different versions of UseEmpty in those folders. So the latest update for UseEmpty that actually made a difference is the April one. So you will see that the binary was really updated now in September as well, but they didn't do anything for UseEmpty. But this one actually has hotfixes for load state in it. So I do recommend to keep your ADK on the site server somewhat up to date. It helps. And if you have an older version, you can just download the new one. You just run the ADK setup, and it will automatically update it to the last version. And then, of course, you need to update your package in Config Manager. Now, back to my sequence. I select the settings package. That's just the ini file and the anatend file in this package. And I'm good to go. So now I have a sequence for mic. And to make this one work with UEFI, what I need to do is some changes to it. So for some odd reason, they decided to format the disk twice. I'm not sure why, but they do it. So they will format it once here, and then we'll format it again over here. And the thing, what they do is that they create the four UEFI partitions twice as well, and UEFI doesn't like that at all. Or rather, the OSD disk part exe in Config Manager doesn't like it one bit. You will get like a memory error or something and a code. So what you need to do is you need to find the first two, and you simply need to remove the first three UEFI partitions. So it only wipes the disk with a clean partition. And you do that for this one as well. And that's it. That's all you need to do to get a sequence and integrated with MDT to work reliably with UEFI. So, and obviously these sessions are recorded, so if you didn't take notes, you can go home and in 24 hours you can download this session and, well, you can play around with it. Other things you can do is that, how many of you are using BitLocker? A good few of you. How many of you think that running around to every machine in the building, going to BIOS, enable a password or set the password and enable TPM chip is fun to do when you have 4,000 machines? Probably not. It's much more nicer to actually take a Windows 7 sequence and simply add some scripts to it that does that for you. So in here, I've added a script that me and Michael put together a few years ago that actually check the type of vendor that is and will call the correct vendor tool. So if it's an HP, it will call the BIOS config tool. If it's a Lenovo, it will call the Lenovo scripts. If it's a Dell, it will call the CCTK or the beta version of the PowerShell commandlets. Anyway, it's simply just a script that enables BitLocker, or enables TPM, I should say.
And you can actually try it in a virtual machine. Just for testing, because we really need to be able to test. So if you do run this script on a virtual machine, you will get a very interesting message back in the log file. Just try it. I can't tell you what, but it's going to be fun. So it does have support for virtual machines too.
Of course it won't work, but yeah.
But it's pretty cool.
What we run before we run the configuration script is just a script that you can download from the Deployment Guys webpage. And make sure you get the right version of it, because I have released two. One, which was the official release, and then if you go into the comments, you decided that someone figured out it was broken, and they provided with a fix for it. So if you do download that script, also get the fix in it. This is a script that simply checks if BIOS is ready for BitLocker. And if it is, it will set a property, and if that property is true, I will run that one. And I will reboot the machine, and I will check it again, and if it then is okay, if life is good, I will use the default action to enable BitLocker. So simply add a few steps to the sequence, and it will configure BitLocker for you.
What we have seen for one customer is that they really need to enforce this, but they, on the other hand, don't want to stop the process. So if it can't enable BitLocker, it's going to create a ticket in the service management system or send an email. So whomever is responsible gets notified that we tried really hard to enable BitLocker on that machine, but we couldn't do it. We don't know why, but we continue doing the installation, and the service management gets a ticket in the system. I have used the CTI send mail for that, and I also use the Orchestrator runbook for it, so that works too.
A cool thing that you will run into with Config Manager that really doesn't happen with LightTouch is that if you configure policies in Active Directory for BitLocker, especially the TPM validation platform profile, that you often have to relax if you don't want to get to have to type in a 40-character recovery key every single time you boot up a machine. Group policy in Config Manager deployments are being suppressed. So if you want to do those validation profiles set to something, you need to actually have just a registry entry or a script that sets it during deployment. And then, of course, you can, normally group policies can kick off. So what you need to do in Config Manager to make sure everything is rock solid when deploying Windows 8 that you don't have to do for Windows 7 is to add this one into the sequence. This is just an action that will force a final reboot after the sequence is completed. And this one will do two things. One, it will force a group policy update in a supported way. Also, it will make sure that you don't get the infamous or famous error message when you try to log on to a machine that's been deployed with Config Manager the first time, saying your UID could not be created, like a group policy process failing, and you click OK, and you can log in again, and it works. This reboot is actually the official fix for that bug in Windows, which is a Windows bug. So just add that in. It can be anywhere in the sequence, really. I just like to have it in the beginning because I like to see those changes early, but either way. All right. Then, of course, one number one pain point in Windows deployment is drivers. Where to find them and how to deploy them, and that's actually quite easy. What I recommend you guys, and I know Michael is of the same opinion, for once we share opinions, go to the vendor in the first place, because the vendor's driver are going to be supported when you call the vendor for support. If you can't find it at the vendor's site, all right, you have to decide on supported or not working at all. And then you normally go with not working at all, and we would like to fix that problem into working. So you go to the vendor's vendor and get the stuff. What I recommend for the vendor version or vendor way is use their tools. So for HP, use their SoftPack Download Manager. It's absolutely a terrible tool, but it will get the job done. It's written by people who cannot write Windows apps, but it works. It does the job. It's a bit slow, too.
I would say one of the most interesting things is that it's using FTP as the transfer protocol.
Just look at this. I now have WordPad in focus.
Based on the fact that FTP is the most common protocol on the internet, was that in the 1960s or is it like in the 50s? I think HTTP is more popular nowadays.
No, I actually got an email from HP explaining that they had done some metrics from this tool, and most people were actually using FTP with it, being the default protocol for the tool.
Which you can't change unless you actually know how to do that, because you can't see in the UI. So
there is a force HTTP switch you can add. It's undocumented. And whoa, that was a new one. It's a new protocol right there.
it's the fastest HTTP protocol ever created.
Yeah.
Yep.
I think it's a scaler doing some magic, or someone heard me saying bad things about HP and cut the recording out. I don't know. But you can change the utility. But this is simply you select the model you have in your download. And when you download the stuff, you select download and unpack. So then you get the extracted driver in a format that you can import into LightTouch and that you can import in Config Manager.
One of the really cool things that I would like you to show, if you...
Okay, I'll need to find the driver.
Yeah, you need to find the driver.
Shall I do my 8570?
You can do the 8570.
All right.
So is that in some cases, we really need to install the application. I don't want to install the application, but I need to install the application, otherwise the driver doesn't work. And then you need to find the silent switch.
So I'm sure you're going to install the AMD video driver and control panel.
Absolutely. Is it small?
Probably not. No, it's not. But 300 megs, give or take.
Take a smaller.
No, I only need this one.
Oh, yes, it's true.
This is the cool file in the utility. Because if you open that file, and you don't have to download everything to see it, I hope.
It's going to use FTP to find a text file. And the text file contains all the silent parameters and in many cases also the return codes. So this application gives you a 3010 or a 1010 or a 42 whatever or one.
Silent setup. Install. That's how you install it silently. So you create a package in Config Manager, you create an application in MDT with that command line, and life is good. And what you often will see inside these CVA files is actually the Config Manager specific parameters. So for example, you will often see it will type in something like dash SMS for wait command and dash F2 for log file, something like install shield setups needs, you will find in here as well. So they are ready to go with Config Manager and Light Touch, which is nice. For Dell machines, you simply go to the Dell website, you find the cab files, and off you go. These are not perfect, but they are close enough. It's a really good starting point.
And what Johan means, but not perfect, is as an example. Let's assume that I download this driver pack and I install all the drivers. Everything is good to go, and I can't enable BitLocker because I don't have a TPM chip anymore. Strange? If I do a Windows 8.1 DVD, I do have a TPM chip, but now I don't have one. Apparently, there's some kind of driver that makes something with a TPM chip. Yes, absolutely. You now need to download the vendor's security application to be able to enable it because they neutralize the TPM chip and just have it as a shim driver. So now you need to start asking yourself, do I really want to do the security toolkit from the vendor for 10,000 machines over the 5 years that the machine will be in production? Really? You want to do that? No, you don't. So you need to pick out the drivers that is actually destroying the machine for you. So less is more. Only install the drivers you actually need.
For Lenovo's, quite easy. You use the update retriever. Works the same way. You specify the model, but you don't use the model name. You use the machine type when you specify the model. And when you download those drivers, they will be in this format on the drive. So here is drivers for a ThinkPad that I put over here from the repository. And what do you think LightTouch or Config Manager will do when you try to import that driver? Won't import it, promise. If you open up the text file to learn more about this, you will learn absolutely nothing that is related to setup. It will simply tell you what the driver it is and that there is a trademark registered in the name of the vendor and so forth. The XML file, however, is more interesting because here you can learn the command lines both for the silent setup, exactly like the HB command in the CVA file, but you also learn that if you want to just extract it, you have to use the very silent switch together with the extract command, which is obviously totally different from a silent switch. But you don't need to do that. That's the cool part. This is just useful if you already have it and you just need to extract it. Because in the update retriever, what you can do it to the repository and you can simply do an export. You specify a folder, you specify the model, and what comes out is the following. The drivers in an extracted format, which you can happily import into LightTouch and Config Manager. So the best thing you can have these days is a drivers repository where you have all the vendors, where you have all the models with all the drivers, and you always keep this repository nice and clean, and then you import that into either LightTouch and Config Manager. And as a matter of fact, Michael has one.
What do I have?
Drivers.
Drivers. Yeah, I do drivers.
Script you're obviously not following.
I've never followed the script. Do we have a script for this?
Oh. Manuscript.
Okay, manuscript. Yes, I do have drivers. I have a folder with drivers. This is just my demo things that I have. One of the problems we have with drivers is sometimes they need to go to application. We will cover that in a few seconds. But how do you do with drivers in Windows, in LightTouch? Well, there's basically two or three ways. You need to make a decision. Number one, do you trust plug and play? If you do, then it's easy. Just import every driver to a big bunch of drivers and hope for the best. That might work if you have one vendor and maybe two or maybe three models that is most likely manufactured at the same time. And you will never ever change vendor or buy another new model. And sometimes I ask the customer, is that the way you have it? Yes, that's the way it's going to be. You own the company? No. So you don't know, right? You have no idea what's going to happen tomorrow when someone goes down and say, hey, we're switching to Dell. And then you go like, no, that's really not going to work. So plug and play doesn't work for that reason, because there's going to be a vendor A and a vendor B machine, and are going to have the same OEM identification for that particular network adapter. But the two vendors have two different drivers. They are almost the same. They kind of work. But can you imagine this phone call? Hi, I'm deploying a Windows machine. It's a Dell machine. Okay, the HP driver doesn't work. Can you help me? No, but it did install that driver because it has a better plug-and-play match, right? So the other reason is two-tier drivers. Anybody heard about two-tier drivers? Oh, and you love them too?
No, hate them. No.
Two-tier drivers is really cool. It's a driver, it's a physical device in the machine with a plug-and-play ID, right? It's just that plug-and-play ID is not really the device. That is the bus. Behind that bus, there's two or more devices. When the plug and play ID scan, Windows P scans for plug and play ID, it's going to find the bus, but never loads the driver. So it has no idea what's behind that bus. So it's going to load half the driver. Enough for you to see that you are missing the driver for the Rensis Electronics USB 3.0 or something like that.
It was actually a Twitter feed, a comment in the Twitter feed. Plug and play apparently lies.
Yes, it does. It's true. So, I mean, we can't remove plug and play. That's one of the problems. What we can do is if you have kids, the only way to serve a decent meal if you have multiple kids is to never ask them for what they would like to eat. That's the dumbest thing you can do as a parent. You just serve them. Today, kids, it's meatballs, and then it's meatballs, and then it's done. We do the same thing here. We feed Windows with the drivers that
you're supposed to use.
With meatballs, and that works. It's IKEA around the corner here. So what we do is this. We import the drivers and we organize them into different folders, and it just happens to be the name of the it just happens to be the name of the operating system together with the name of the model of the machine. The operating system name we need to type in, but the name of the model is actually a parameter or a variable in LightTouch. So that is the same as model. And we can find a model on any decent machine by running a PowerShell command. Get W object Win32 computer system, maybe. And that's going to tell me that this model is an HP EliteBook 8540W. So that means if I create a folder with that name, like I have here, and then I right-click and import all the drivers into that folder, I can now modify my task sequence and say, well, I'm deploying Windows 8.1, And for the 64-bit version, I modified it like this. I modify inject drivers so the selection profile is set to nothing. That means install nothing at all. But at the same time, I specify that you need to install every driver from nothing, which doesn't make sense unless you add this line, which specifies the operating system together in this case with the model alias. That's because I'm running a user exit script that converts the model into model alias instead. But if you don't use that user exit script, you just type model instead. Now, that is really good for the drivers that is supposed to go into this machine. But in some cases, we have generic drivers. I do have customers using smart cards, they're using printers, they're using various devices, and every Windows 8.1 machine really needs to have that driver, regardless of the model. And in that case, you add this. You create a folder called generic, and you put every generic driver for every Windows 8.1 machine in that to that folder, and now it's going to inject every driver for that particular model together with every driver that is in this folder. And that means that the only thing I need to do now is that for each and every model I have, I need to create a folder with a model name, put the drivers in there, and I'm good to go. Which means that driver handling now is total control. We force the driver down to the machine, and we know what driver goes into each machine. That means that if you have a new model, you will never affect older models. They will still work with the same drivers that they had. So it becomes a more reliable system, and deployment works over time. So that is how you do it in LightTouch. In Configuration Manager, we can do it similarly, very similar, but not exactly the same way. And I think Johan has a really nice demo on that.
First of all, when importing drivers, you can do it in two ways. You can do it manually, simply create the folders, select the import, the next finish, and you do that 35 times if you have 35 models. But back in the days, back when I thought Windows Vista was really going to take off, I used to have a blog named Deploy Vista, which sounded like a good idea back in 2006 when it was created. But I put together a PowerShell script that if you have the folder structure, you just run the script and it creates the virtual folders in the workbench and imports all the right drivers to the right folders. So you run the script and take a coffee and then you come back and everything is neatly organized in a way that will make Michael's setting work in the sequence. And of course you can do the same thing for a config manager. If you go to my blog again, my new one, not named Vista, and you search for Cortec, you actually find a driver import script that one of the Cortec guys put together. That will do the same thing for Config Manager. So what I recommend that you do in Config Manager, in addition to run that script, of course, is to make sure you have the same logic. You will have a repository with all your drivers. That's totally fine. And whatever you do, don't change the sources, the packet sources. If you have a folder structure like this, to where you have downloaded all the drivers, not there, but here, sources, OSD, drivers. Don't change this. If you have a folder for EliteBook, and you imported the drivers from there, don't change it, or you will be in for a nice surprise the next time you try to update that package. Because the driver package will have its own location, and that's a normal package data source, but you will also see that each and every driver, in fact, also have a source. So don't ever change that. Or you will see in your disk manager log file, you will have error after error after error related to this. So when I import my drivers, I simply tag them with one or more models. I allow them to be imported, but I can tag them with multiple tags if needed. And whatever you do in Config Manager, don't delete drivers before checking it could be used in multiple packages. And if you delete the driver, you delete it from every package that is using that driver. So if you have a Dell where you're troubleshooting some wireless drivers and you want to upgrade the wireless driver only for that model, you do not do delete and you import a new wireless driver. What you do instead, you right-click and you do edit. Because when you do edit, you can simply add it or remove it from various packages at the same time, which is much nicer than just whack it from all the packages that you had. So in Config Manager, we do have driver packages, and the Cortex script not only import and tag the drivers correctly, it also creates the needed packages. So if I go back to my Config Manager sequence, and I will do my Windows 7 sequence, because that's what you guys are deploying currently, most of you, I simply have all the drivers here as packages, and each of these will have a condition that somehow identifies that model. Could be a variable, could be a WMI query, could be a user exit script, it could be something that identifies that model. Find one that works for you, and off you go. All right. And by the way, we do love questions, I'm just saying. All right, so that was drivers. And apps. What apps would you like to have in a sequence, Mike?
Depending on what kind of system we're deploying. If we're deploying a client, it's going to be the base client applications. And then depending on department and things like that, language, location. But there's a bunch of application that is what I called hardware-based, meaning nobody's really going to select this. They just need to be there. Could be applications for that particular model to make, to enable the keys you have on that machine. Could be an application for the fingerprint reader, things like that. So we need to have that. So it's user application and it's hardware application.
So the cool thing about apps in LightTouch and Config Manager is that you can deal with them in two ways. One way is to add them statically into the sequence. Maybe set a condition on them, but still they are inside the sequence. And companies who do that route, they typically end up in having 25 sequences because they have different apps for different hardware, for different department, whatever. What you also can do when you have the integration with LightTouch or with MDT is that you can have lists of applications in either text files or in scripts or in databases, but you just have lists. And you can feed that list into the sequence. So the sequence dynamically does that. And it all comes down to rules.
Yes, it does. So if you flip the screen over to me, I can really fast show you how to do it in LightTouch.
I'm not sure about the flipping, but I can click the button here.
Okay, so there's a button you can click. So if you look at my screen, you can see that I have a folder called Hardware Applications, and I have the system default settings here, and I have the fingerprinter driver here, and it's just, you know, applications. They also have, an application GUID number, which is unique for this application. If you go to that folder, you can see that I have something called a bundle. In LightTouch, we can create a bundle. The bundle doesn't really install anything because it doesn't have anything to install. It says it's an application bundle. Is it a package? No, it's a bundle. But it does have dependencies. So I can now go into hardware applications and say, well, for that particular model, I need to have the following apps. In this case, I should go to the 8570 instead because it already has that. And I can order the application and say, this application goes first, this application goes next, right? And I don't even need to see the other apps. I mean, these applications are just for me, so maybe we should hide them so we don't see them. So nobody can really select these applications anyhow. The only thing they can select would be that application. But I don't really want this to be selected either. I mean, what's the point of selecting this app? For a user, should they select, I'm running this kind of computer? They don't really know what computer you're running. The techie doesn't need to choose that either. So instead of choosing, we copy the application GUID number, and then...
Or memorize it.
or memorize it. Pick and choose here. We go to rules, and then we make sure that we have something called. I have a lot of rules here.
More than average, I can tell.
Yeah, I have the make alias. Yeah, I have the model alias there. That's fine. I can use that. So that means we can now type in, for instance, this machine, and specify that if that is the machine, you should have the following mandatory application 001. And it's always called 001 in each section. That's going to be enumerated into 001, 002, 003. So based on location, based on, I don't know, temperature on a weather station, or based on whatever you want, we can define that this application goes in. So application is decided layer by layer. This application goes to the reference image. These applications goes to the machine because it's that particular machine. These applications goes to the machine because it's that location. This application goes to the machine because it's a member of that group. Things like that. We call that dynamic application assignment. And that's pretty much how we do it.
Yep. So for Config Manager, we follow a similar approach. We have a list of apps that are being deployed by our sequence. So to give you an example, the one I gave on the... Are anyone in here from the pre-conference yesterday? Some of you? All right, we did a Config Manager pre-con yesterday where I demonstrated this. Pretty sure I found it faster then, but all right. This is just a set of inner files, but this, for example, is a text file that will tell Config Manager to install packages and some settings depending on if it's a laptop or a desktop. Obviously, I could have added model here as well and typed in a model name, but this example is laptop versus desktop. So in this scenario, my sequence will install these two packages for everybody. Every machine gets that. But it will use a built-in function that will detect it if it's a laptop, and if it is a laptop, it will also install that package, a Cisco VPN client, and it will put the machine into the laptops of you in the Contoso domain. But if it's a desktop, it will not install the Cisco VPN client, and instead it will put the machine into the desktops of you. So again, by having a simple text file, we are now instructing the sequence to behave slightly differently depending on what type of hardware we're using it to. In the back end, it's really just a VB script being called that is through WMI querying for chassis type. But you don't have to worry about that. That's something MDT does in the back end. You just use the result of those tests. And the cool thing about doing this is that we can simulate this. Both LightTouch and Config Manager works the exact same way there. I can open up a PowerShell prompt, and I can go to that folder, and I can run the PowerShell script that will simulate what if I have deployed this machine, which is a laptop, by the way. I can see it's a laptop because if I search for model, it's indeed an 8570. And you can see that indeed it found out that the laptop property was true. It's not a desktop, it's not a server, it's not UEFI enabled, it's not running on battery. You can easily have a rule that says if you're on battery, abort. You need to be on, you know, wired power, real power adapter on the machine. So everything MDT finds about your machine you can use as condition. And in this case, I decided to use the is laptop one. Because later in the log file, you will see that it actually found out it was a laptop right here. It put it into the laptops of you, and it would install all three apps because it was a laptop. The trick when assigning these packages is in every section where you add them, begin with number one per section, or it will break. MDT or Light Touch or Config Manager will create a new array, but only if they all begin with one. So why don't I use applications in Config Manager? I mean, Config Manager 12 has a perfectly good application model, superior, in fact, in terms of the old packages. So why don't I use apps? Because they don't simply work reliable in a sequence, unfortunately. Even with the latest update, CU3, they still don't work as they should. So if I have to choose between may work and always work, I still use packages because they always work in a config manager sequence. I hope they will fix it at some point, but so far they have not. We have customers spending months with premier support trying to get apps to work in the sequence, just to have to revert back into packages again. In fact, there was a fellow that was presenting down at TechEd Australia that is actually happening this week as well. One of them, because they have two now. David O'Brien. He put together a PowerShell script that will convert applications into packages. But remember, it's only the stuff that goes into the sequence. Please do not call Microsoft and yell and say that Johan told me that applications doesn't work at all. Because they do, just not in the sequence. If you want to push out applications, go ahead. The requirement rules are awesome. Much better than packages and you push stuff out. But in a sequence, packages work, so use them there. And by default, in the sequence, the step that does the magic is already there. You have to change this not to accept the list. The default template will accept the list, and life is good. All right. Any questions? All right. Let's check the Twitter feed. Why not use apps? I just told them that, so I don't need to do that. All right, let's continue. Now, something you do want to enable during deployment is updates. There is no point of installing a machine without the updates, so the user has to wait 3 hours to make sure all updates are being deployed. And in both Light Touch and Config Manager, in the sequence, there is a ready-made action that does software updates. There is a difference with those two actions. In Light Touch, it's named Install Windows Update or Run Windows Update. In Config Manager, it's named Install Software Updates. In Light Touch, it always works. In Config Manager, it may work. But we can get it to work always in Config Manager as well. I will show you. Go over here. Go to my Config Manager server. Ta-da! Ba-dum. Get a sequence, I can do my Windows 7 sequence. This is the action in Config Manager that installs updates, assuming you have deployed them in Config Manager, and they're already out there on the DPs. If you feed this action with too many updates, it will break. If you take a blank Windows 7 image, the default WIM file, and you patch the 134-something updates that it needs, this step will break, guaranteed. So what I see customers do to make this work, they actually make multiple copies of this step with reboots in between to make sure that they get all these updates. There is an easier fix for this. Don't use Config Manager to build your reference images for Config Manager. Use Light Touch to build a reference image. Because not only is it faster, not only can you use that image for every type of deployment that you have, not only Config Manager, but also handing it over to your VMM guys, the server teams, or the VMware team, or the VDI team. They can use the same image now. They don't have to have separate images. But always, always, the updates will work in Light Touch. The downside is you need to spin up a separate WSUS server. That's the downside, those 10 minutes. But it will always work. Because when you take that WIM file and put it back into config manager again, this action will run happily in the default configuration. Because now it only has to deal with the updates that are missing since you created the reference image. And I don't mean that you need to recreate the reference image every single month, no. But at least 4 or 5 times a year, maybe. So that the image is fairly up to date when config manager deploys it. And then it will install the Delta updates in that action, and that will work. It only fails when it gets too much to do. It's probably a memory thing.
Well, one of the issues they have is, of course, that when you run a Windows update inside a LightTouch, for instance, they use the VUSA.exe, which is built and created by the Windows Update team, so they actually control that. When you do offline patch management, they use the DSM tool to inject the patches. If every patch was perfect, didn't require a reboot, things like that, it would work. The problem is the quality of the patches is somewhat floating.
That's an interesting point of view. I mean, this step right here is obviously online patching. Yeah. And this one does work if it doesn't have too many updates to do. If you go here and I select an image that I have, a Windows 8 image, and I do a schedule update, which is the offline servicing that Michael is referring to, please don't do this. It's not reliable at all. You are more likely to break your image than to actually service it with the update. I do not recommend using this. I've seen too many customers and experienced myself too many images fail because of injecting updates offline here. It's much more reliable to have LightTouch build and capture that image, running the updates online, and then simply use the default action in the config manager sequence to deploy the Delta updates, if there are any Delta updates. So it's a super reliable process.
So this means that we really believe that offline patch management will work. That's going to be, in the long term, that's going to be the way, right? So we try it. Every time there's a small update or a new change, we test it and verify it, but as long as it's not stable enough, we can't really use that at the customer site.
So in July, we tried it, and there was an update that broke it. In August, we tried it, there was an update that broke it. Last month, we tried it, it was an update that broke it. Dual reboot updates, it doesn't like that at all. There is even a knowledge base article out there now that is listing all the updates that will break a sequence. And it's constantly updated with more updates, like the RDP update this month. Fun stuff. Anyway, there are working workarounds that always work, and always work is nice. But it all comes down to that in these deployment solutions, something can go wrong, and at some point it will. And you have to turn to the log files. And the log files in both MDT and Config Manager are formatted in a way that are supposed to be read by the same trace. And if you have used Config Manager for more than 5 minutes, you know this. Because, well, except for Wally maybe, you don't really use Notepad to read those. You like the same trace utility. The difference is, in LightTouch, it's not added to WinP by default. But in Config Manager, it is. The only problem is it's added to a different path, which is not in the path of the boot image. You have to know the path to run it, but it's there. But how do you add that to a LightTouch environment? Well, before that, where are log files by default when you do deployments in LightTouch and Config Manager? Where are they? They're on the client. Where are you? Not even remotely close to the client. You're often somewhere else, a different country even. You want them server-side, so how do you get them server-side? There's a hint in the left-hand corner, over there. Rules, the Inify. So if I go back to my demo environment, and if I open up I can do my config manager since I have that one opened. If I add this single line in, I'm telling both Config Manager and LightTouch that if something goes wrong, please go ahead and copy the log files to that share on that server. And it will create a subfolder for each and every machine named after the machine by default. Simple as that. Then you get the log file server side. And the cool thing about Light Touch is it's actually, and Config Manager, it's intelligent enough to not only get the normal log file, like this SMS TS log file, it will also reach out and grab other stuff in the system. So for example, if it fails when it does driver injection, you can see it will get this log file that can help you do driver troubleshoot the drivers. If it fails trying to join the machine to the domain, you can see it's actually going to grab the setup log file, net setup log file, and copy that to the server as well to help you troubleshoot why it couldn't join that domain. And the main problem in Config Manager is that the log file by default is only a megabyte in size. And when it goes beyond that limit, it creates an archive, another megabyte, and then it overwrites the first one. So it can only store about 2 megs of content. A sequence will generate easily 5. And it's difficult to take 5 meg of content and store in a 2 meg container. Light Touch deals with this by default because they increase the log file size to 10 megs. Config Manager doesn't do that by default. So how do we do that? How do we increase the log file size in Config Manager to make sure we always have data in it when we troubleshoot?
We tell it to.
Yeah, we tell it to.
Yeah, which you are going to show.
Kind of hoping for a different answer, but fair enough. Fair enough. What you need to do is you need to remember two things. You need to remember Frank, obviously. He's one of the support engineers with Microsoft, has written an excellent blog post about this. And you need to remember this file. Because if you do a search, an internet search, using your favorite search engine, and you combine these two, you'll find that blog post. And what it says is that if you add a file named like that into the Windows folder of your boot image and you put some content in it, like for example the log file size, then life is good. Now you increase it to 10 megs and this will work during the entire WinP phase. If you need additional sizing after that, it will be a normal client parameter. But let's face it, if we do OSD, when is it most likely to break? During the WinP phase. So that's where you want to have that log file. All right. Any final questions?
Yeah, I got them all.
You got them all?
Yeah.
Any questions? All right, we will be around here for a few more minutes while we are packing up. And please remember to fill in the evals and enjoy the rest of the conference. Thank you, guys.